Hey everybody, it's Andy, off of another long weekend of playing Cube with some good friends from out of town. Look, here's the deal. We had an ambitious plan for the episode this week, and it just didn't work out. Forces beyond our control made it so the episode we had planned couldn't happen. So, no regular episode of Lucky Paper Radio this week. I'm very sorry. But I don't want to leave you sickos empty-handed. I know that you all love your little Monday treat. So instead of a normal episode, I have the audio from a stream we did like a month and a half ago with Cube Community Pillar Aqua One, where we talk through some changes they want to make to their powered vintage cube. For those that don't know, this is an extremely beautiful, heavily altered cube that is a real labor of love. We'll link the cube in the show notes. And yeah, this is a very casual conversation where we are just basically talking through some of their proposed changes, and they're bouncing some ideas off of Anthony and I. If this is your first episode of the show, this is not how we typically do things around here. This conversation is completely unedited, so it's definitely not our normal production value that we're aiming for. Also, we typically have a cards mentioned page where we basically provide a visual spoiler of all the cards we mentioned in chronological order, and because this episode is unedited, we don't have that either. So, not a good place to start if this is your first episode. And for those of you that were there for this stream live, I am sorry that this is a conversation you've already heard. But for everybody else, at least something to hold you over until next week. Real quick, I do want to mention that a friend of the show, Caleb Gannon, who we had on to talk about his Powered Synergy Cube a while back when it was on MTGO, has successfully launched a Kickstarter for a card game of his own design, Algamancy. So you should check out that if you are interested. The story of Algamancy is basically that Caleb got a lot of really great feedback when his cube was on MTGO and then turned that into making a bunch of custom cards for the cube and kind of taking it in this wild direction with lots of custom cards, and then eventually casting off the shackles of the rules engine of Magic the Gathering entirely and designing this game Algamancy from scratch. So if you like Cube, it might be the kind of game you'll enjoy. Anyway, that's it. Here's our little bonus episode. Thanks for your understanding, everybody. Well, why don't we just start then? Aqua, do you want to introduce yourself and maybe give us some background on this cube?
Sure. My name is Aqua. I'm in Seattle. I started creating this in 2006 after the flurry of articles that came out about Cube in 2005. The first real drafts of this were 2008, so that's where I really kind of consider it being curated from then. I have been continually editing this thing ever since. It had a huge history in Cube Tutor, but there's a bug on the site that ended up deleting it and all of my history data.
Oh no.
I tried contacting Ben a few times with no luck. I've had it up on Cobra as long as Cobra has been up, as far as I know. And I absolutely love this thing. The overview needs a lot of editing. This thing has a lot of detail in it. I started this format a long, long time ago, but I like how it goes in and breaks down every specific thing. The design of this, I did not use Mikko Vintage as a template. Rather, I went in completely my own direction. I threw spreadsheet aesthetics out the window, and it's less focused on macro archetypes, more on the minor. Yes, the Cube subreddit. I feel you. Part of a Reddit blackout. It veers a lot heavily towards combo. Aggro still wins, control still wins, literally everything wins in this. There's a lot of alters in here, some very extreme alters. I need to make a cheat sheet for a handful of them, especially anything by Howard Lyon. He loves the airbrush. Take this to pretty much every event I go to. I get as many drafts of it in as I can. I think we had 6 or 7 at Minneapolis. Had a couple down in California Cube Champs. And looking to get a lot more at KubeCon, which, oh my god, best event. I absolutely love KubeCon. I am so excited for it this year.
Hey, Pugs in the chat too. Yeah, we're really excited for KubeCon too. I'm excited to meet you finally. And maybe get to draft this beautiful cube. So it's been around for a long time, and you say it's not based on the Magic Online Vintage Cube, but it is a powered vintage cube. You've also got some conspiracies in here. In your own words, what is the like goal for this gameplay? Like, why does this cube exist? What is its purpose?
To give people a skill-intensive, high-power format where you can play with things that you otherwise wouldn't get to. There are stories that come out of this, and I really live for those. When someone sits there and does a turn one channel and the other person is able to answer what they throw down. When someone goes in and starts going for an infinite and you shut them down and you get stacks that go like five cards high in interaction, I love that.
All right, so it's for big splashy plays, aiming for some maybe higher variance gameplay where some crazy stuff can happen. People can channel stuff out on turn one, but also maybe answer a channel threat on turn one. And yeah, for those that haven't looked, you should definitely check out the visual spoiler of this cube because of all of the sick alters and custom art and, you know, just things like Christopher Rush signed Black Lotus just hanging out down here. You know, normal stuff that most of us have in our cubes, but good to look at it in this context too. Really a beautiful cube, so definitely something that, you know, I think you have some questions or like some design philosophy related stuff you want to talk about, and I'm really curious to see how biased I will be with any suggestions for design cuts based on like, well, does this card really fit? Who knows? But the altar is so beautiful, you know?
Yeah,
like
that. I mean, that adds such a layer of challenge to the design of this, I'm sure.
There's a note in chat about this, which I can't put on Cube Cobra, but I may upload scans of everything to Imgur and link to it. All of the basics are signed. Most of them are altered by the original artists, and they're all alpha and beta. So it's
wow,
pretty nuts.
That's even more
joke.
Of an accomplishment, I feel like, in some ways than the cube itself, having that many altered basics. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. There's a running joke that I pay Jesper Mir for his mortgage.
Well, somebody's got to do it, you know?
So, first big philosophical thing is the question of whether or not I need more fixing. The current list is on par with Mikko Vintage. They run about 11.2%. I run 10.9%. Theoretically, I could squeeze in a couple more lands. I just don't know if it's needed. Associated with that, I don't have a lot of 4 and 5 color play in this. The only big like 5 color is Progenitus, which is there more for natural order green suns that have sneak attack. But right. I don't run any Kenrith, Golos, Omnath type things. And some people enjoy that, but I'm not sure if those are enough.
I have some questions before I maybe answer the question about fixing. So right now it's a 432 card cube, and you're drafting this in traditional 3x15 style. Are there any other draft rules?
492. It's a weird pack construction thing. It's 2 packs of 14, 2 packs of 12, plus a 16-card Lore Seeker pack.
2 packs of 14, 2 packs of 12. So that's a significantly bigger draft pool. You're drafting a much bigger set of cards
yes.
each time.
Yes. Everyone ends up with 54.
Okay. So you draft the whole thing every time you sit down to draft then? I can't do
Correct.
The math in my head that quickly.
Yes.
Okay, so I think this is an interesting question, right? Like, I think looking at the percentage of fixing is not actually what really matters. It's the percentage of fixing you're going to see across a draft. And
that's true.
Even then, it's not
like 40-card decks, right?
Correct.
So
unless you have a certain conspiracy, and then you're building a 35.
Right.
We're all familiar with Advantageous Proclamation. Hard to pull all these cards out. So yeah, I mean, really, you're still sort of talking about, if you want to make that comparison, the percentage of those lands in 360 would be like the way that you would make the comparison to a different cube, right?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. So I think at 67 lands here at your size, given that you draft the entire cube, you're actually significantly higher in fixing than the Magic Online Vintage cube is, because that's a 540 cube where they're only drafting a subset of the cards every single time. And so to that end, I actually think this is an pretty appropriate amount of fixing. I usually advocate for around 60 fixing lands as a baseline at 360. You're at 67. They're not all fixing lands, so I think it's basically exactly what I normally recommend in an absolute vacuum. And I think it's definitely different that you have to think about the fact that you're drafting all of these cards, so even though it's a different percentage of the overall cube, what really matters is the raw number of fixing lands that you are going to open in a given draft. And I think you're going to have quite a few there. I do have a couple questions about So you're breaking Singleton here for some fixing lands, but I notice it's not consistent. So you have like two Hallowed Fountains, one Flooded Strand, but then two Polluted Deltas, one Watery Grave. Talk about the breakdown of the fixing.
Yeah, there was a lot of crunching on that, on what is going to best enable that color combo based on the density of pips, density of splashing, or more accurately, how frequently certain colors got splashed. Like, are you going to be splashing for like a one of in this that only has a single pip versus do you need to be hitting double pips? And how much are fetch lands going to be valued for things that can recur them? So things that can go in. If you're playing, brain's not working. if you're going to be exiling your fetch lands for mana, or if you're going to be recurring them with Ren and Six, being able to do that comes in handy. There's the single Triome, which is Verma Bright and Green, White, Black, associated with that.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. In my own cubes, I wish we could just see more of this. There's like a lot of really powerful symmetrical land cycles, which is great to have access to that, but it does mean that a lot of cubes end up just playing very symmetrical looking sets of lands, which is fine.
I'm sitting right here. You better say it's fine.
There's a lot of great gameplay that is possible in that space, but I also think it's really great when, in the same way that like the color pie is cool and the fact that different decks play two different strategies and function in different ways is cool, I think it's cool when the mana bases are also asymmetrical and lean into the way that those cards are playing, or the way those colors are playing, and especially sort of thinking about the sort of like distribution of pips and the kinds of other like land interactions, that really appeals to me, so I sort of appreciate those asymmetries.
I'm sorry, Elias, okay. This is going to be a discussion pretty much only. I think we're going to talk with Aqua for as long as Aqua wants to hang out with us. And then if Aqua has to bounce, maybe we'll play one roto match later, possibly, but no promises. But definitely, this is definitely the focus of the stream. So yeah, keep that in mind. I notice you have at least a... Oh, no, you do. You have at least a fetch and a shock and a duel in every color combination, and then there's broken Singleton on some of those. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really cool. I don't think, obviously, anybody playing the cube without looking at the list is ever going to really notice. They're not going to, I mean, sitting at an individual draft seat, you're not going to be like, where was my second Arid Mesa? Like, that's never going to come up. So
I've said that many times.
well, in a cube where you presumably know there are two of them for sure. I think that's really cool, the way you've broken that down and make it asymmetrical. And yeah, the one thing I did notice as I was mousing over here is that a lot of these lands are kind of only lands in name only. Things like Maze of Ith and Tabernacle of Pendrell Vale don't even produce mana. Library of Alexandria is a land. Dark Depths also doesn't produce mana. So Bazaar Baghdad doesn't produce mana. So maybe for the purposes of just looking at, you know, land density, you can kind of consider those more like spells in some senses. But yeah, I think this is like the kind of baseline I would assume for fixing in a cube where you're drafting. This draft format and cube combination is resulting in the amount of fixing I would kind of as a baseline assume for any cube. So I think if fixing is reasonable, I don't immediately see a need for more for any specific reason.
Are there specific gameplay experiences that you've had that have made you ask this question in particular?
There have been occasions where people have said it feels like it's running too low. I didn't personally believe that, but I think it was more likely they were just getting cut. You also have some people who really eat all their vegetables and pick the land super high. And so if you're not seeing them coming through because you weren't picking them initially,
I think that's a great
point. That's on you.
And I think the context that you gave about the people that you're often playing with this, it sounds like it's a pretty mixed group. Like you're going to an event and it's going to be some people that have played it before, but a lot of people that haven't played it before. Is that fair to say?
Yes, there are a couple of local groups that I do play this with. There's a specific group of friends of mine from the Seattle Magic Gathering meetup. And so we meet up and we play there. There's another one, our local game shop, Zulu's, has a cube night on Tuesdays because that's the obligatory cube night.
It is. And apparently across the globe, it's cube is always on Tuesday.
Yeah, and they're great people. We actually get a draft it there tomorrow.
Nice. So, I mean, that's, I think, something worth considering, that could be a reason that people are giving you certain kinds of feedback is, yeah, maybe they just like draft lands a little bit lower than other people and they're not used to playing in the same group, so they're not like adjusted to that meta and they end up just getting cut on lands because everybody else is taking them really highly.
I also think there's a question of how good is the just take all the lands and all of the gold cards that wheel to me, like, you know, forcing five color good stuff or whatever. And I think the better that is, oftentimes the harder it is to draft a, like, responsible but strong two or three color mana base, because there's a couple people that are just, like, hoovering up all the lands even when it doesn't make sense. Or, like, I have a black card and a white card, and now I'm taking Stomping Ground because I just know that I'm going to want to play five colors before I've even, like, gotten deep into the packs. And that's also a question of meta, right? Like, that's a question of, are the people you're playing with going to look at this list and assume, like, I'm just going to jam five color good stuff because that's what I think is good? Do you have a sense of if that's the kind of thing that's happening, where some people are going white card, black card, Stomping Ground, or is it just that people are taking fetch lands highly because they're flexible and then, you know, getting their fetchables when they can?
Most of the feedback of people who are saying they didn't get enough fixing is coming from people who are used to go vintage, and I think they're probably people who are used to drafting your Omnath, Kenrith, etc. decks.
They're used to the Magic Online vintage cube, and they want more fixing.
Are they used to drafting that cube, where I suspect a lot of the people that are playing that online are not the kind of people that are taking the fixing highly?
Maybe. That could be something like that, yeah. It's funny, because you definitely have a lot more fixing, practically speaking, than the Magic Online Vintage Cube, given that you're drafting this entire pool.
Right.
I think it'd be roughly equivalent to, what, 120 lands in the Magic Online Vintage Cube? No, less.
This isn't math time.
Yeah. Theo's in the chat. Theo can do the math. what's up, Hooper Cube? So you definitely have more fixing than that. That's definitely a really interesting example, an interesting anecdote of people that are used to drafting a cube with practically much less fixing that are reporting their experiences that fixing seems lighter here or harder to come by. I think it's got to be, what Anthony said, a matter of how people are drafting it on average, or just like you said, maybe they want this like five-color deck to exist with, you know, Kenrith or Niv-Mizzet or whatever, and they aren't getting those kinds of payoffs or things, and they're just like, they're kind of saying, this deck I like to draft is not here, right? Like, I like to draft this five color deck, and the way that feedback is coming out is that they're like, where are the lands? I'm not sure. Theo says 90 out of 540, and yes, I think that's right, Theo. Thank you for your math. So yeah, I think the fixing question, I think you seem fine on fixing. I would not look at this list, given how it's drafted, and say you could use a lot more. I also think that more fixing is almost universally better, and I say this in big air quotes, being because the question is just, what are you cutting for it, right? And if what you're cutting is cards that don't really matter for the cube anyway, which I think this list is probably has very little of, given how much you've drafted it and how much you've refined it, but especially drafting really big pools like you are, you know, how much of people's sideboard is like, well, this is just my, you know, four on-color cards that are just the least good, right? And how much are those cards consistently in people's sideboards because they're just the least good red card in their red deck and it just doesn't make the cut? And if you're giving up those kinds of slots for more fixing, then it seems like a slam dunk to me. It's like a win-win, right? You're kind of giving up very little or nothing to get just better fixing for all the decks across the board. But if what you're giving up is cool build-arounds that don't get there all the time, or, you know, combo pieces that are like, you know, redundancy but not the primary ones, if you're giving up stuff that really matters that gives the cube texture, then adding more fixing is a real cost. Was that helpful?
Thank you. Very. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Next one. Green's color identity, or more accurately, it's a role in this. I've had times in the past where I was running the quote, Unga Bunga package, having a lot of GX mid-range, particularly like green-red. And now it functions very strongly as a support color or as an anchor color, but not so much as its own identity. And I personally don't have an issue with this, but I'm wondering if you guys feel that is a problem. And if there is, what you would recommend as payoffs for mono-green.
Now, when you say green, do you mean mono-green or green and also in combination with any other set of colors?
So currently green does great as an anchor color or as a sort of support into other things, but green as mono green doesn't really exist. It mono green has not won in over a year, which I'm personally okay with. I'm just wondering, in general, is it okay to have that, and do I need to be have a, something I explicitly call out to people?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, so much of cube design is really just about setting expectations, and I think that that's a big challenge. If somebody opens up a pack and sees Rafelos, they're going to kind of think that mono green can be a thing here. So I'm wondering if maybe it's more, and you say like you're okay with mono green not being a thing, so would you be open to cutting some iconic cards like Rafelos?
So Rafelos is amazing. It isn't, how to say this? So you can use Rafelos to power into things that are normally your payoffs in Brown Town, things where people are, why am I blanking on the dang card name? Reveal artifacts, get mana for the number of artifacts you reveal.
Metalworker.
Thank you. Where people are used to doing things with Metalworker, used to doing things with your four drop artifacts that power into plus threes, like your Thran Dynamos. So you can power these things out with Rufels really easy. Mm-hmm. And so I still have it in there. I still have it as you need to power out a big burn spell. You need to power out a big wipe out the board or float a bunch of mana before you do your upheavals and whatnot. Like, those are still in there.
Sure.
So Rafelos has still done an incredible job doing what Rafelos does. And green really helps you just get a couple turns ahead of everyone else.
I think there's a couple questions here. One is the kind of question we're answering, which is like, does the mono green deck exist here? Is it good? Can you draft a mono green deck and have success doing so? And I don't know. From looking at the list, right, you have...
No, you can't.
Now, are people... You say that people haven't done it in, you know, a year or whatever. Is that because... Mm-hmm. Nobody's drafting mono green because everyone's ending up in multiple colors of base green decks? Or is that because people are trying to draft mono green and then going 1-2?
I know one person commented that they tried to force mono green, and there was an awkward, yeah, you can't really do that here afterwards. But a lot of people consistently do like green red, green black, green white, and that works fine. Or having enough green for your dorks to guarantee that you're hitting 3 and 4 drops on turn 2. So we still have that. I just want to make sure that that's adequate. And if adding something in the overview calling that out would be sufficient, or if I should look into reworking green to make it more self-complete.
So I think adding something to the overview is a great idea. I'll also say... as a professional web developer, people don't read stuff on the internet. So even though that'll help the small portion of dedicated people, most people are not going to see that. But I do like the idea of if you can actually insert things into the actual draft environment, people will pick up on that a lot more easily. So I'm wondering more about Rafelos, not as is it performing well, but just what signals is it sending? Like I think the Oikinator mentioned in the chat. So are there other cards you could sort of push... add to green to sort of send that signal better that it's like, this is here as a support color, but you're going to need other stuff to do with this.
Something else I'm noticing here too, looking at the list. So I think I should say off the bat, I'm a big fan of the fact that you have a like asymmetrical set of colors here. More blue cards, I think, totally makes sense for a cube with these kind of goals. There are just more broken blue cards that have been printed. I think it's totally appropriate to have more blue cards. So blue has 64, then you have basically 50 in all the other color combinations, you know, give or take one or two. But I do notice that, you know, I think a lot of the green cards kind of belong to different sorts of decks, right? Like if I look at something like Heartbeat of Spring, right? That's a green card, but obviously never... I shouldn't say obviously. I would assume you're never playing this in a mono-green deck. This seems like it is purely a Storm combo card to me. Mm-hmm. So it is, you know, green in spirit, but not really green in practice. I feel kind of similarly about cards like... let's see here. Like a Channel 2. Like, again, you're going to want like the big colorless payoffs for that. So my mono green deck running a bunch of like Titan of Industries and Crater of Behemoths, I don't know if that's always going to be a channel deck. Feels like that could kind of be a different thing. I feel like there was other examples. Oh, and another example. I actually have a question here. You have
Nissa,
and Nissa's good for sure. I like Nissa a lot. I noticed you have Protean Hulk, but no Flash.
Yes.
Talk to me
so
about
Flash. Yeah,
Protean Hulk.
Flash used to be in there, and I want to bring it back in. Okay. So I just need to figure out what I'm cutting for it, but it will come back in. There is no explicit Flash line. last I checked.
That was my next question. Is there an immediate win if you flash in Hulk, or is it just like incredible value and go from there?
Yeah, there's things theoretically one could do. I can make a couple swaps to make it viable. The main thing is just ensuring that I add certain cards, but finding those slots is always a headache.
Yeah. So I think maybe part of it might just be a density thing. Like, and again, here in the one drop slot, you have quite a few mana dorks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 mana dorks. Shepherd, not really a mana dork in the same sense. Shepherd kind of speaks to a specific kind of like elf tribal deck, which may or may not overlap with the actual big mono green deck. Even something like Eternal Witness to me, like, I don't want Eternal Witness in a mono green deck. I want that in a deck where I have powerful instants and sorceries that I want to recur. Maybe in like a natural order deck, I could see wanting an Eternal Witness, sure. Maybe. But your average green deck, like mono green, I'm not looking at a card like Eternal Witness and being super duper happy with it. So I wonder if it's even just a matter of just having a little more, just making green a little deeper, if you do want to support mono green as a deck. And if you don't, then I don't think you have a problem. And I think if people are getting the signals that mono green is a deck, like I also include Crater of Behemoth and Rafelos in my cube, and those are the only cards in my cube that are like loudly, you know, flashing draft mono green. And it also very rarely happens in my cube. It's a very different cube. It's not, you know, powered. It's not no combos, nothing unfair going on, but it very rarely comes together. People don't draft it that often. They tend to draft more of the multicolor green decks or the green mid-range style decks. But I do like the fact that with just those cards being there, I feel like they kind of create an entire different archetype. And still every once in a while, someone will pack one, pick one Crater of Behemoth and just say, I'm doing this. I'm going to take all of the cheap mana dorks and just go all in on this, like, you know, kind of combo deck almost, this combo ramp deck. And so I think they do play this role of potentially supporting a whole new deck with their existence, with very few slots in the cube, as it were. But they, at the risk of, I do think, possibly sending some misinformation, right? Like, you mentioned all the other uses of that big mana for Rafelos, and that's definitely true, but that is all requisite on having a lot of forests, right, for that to really work. And so, still Rafelos I see and think, yeah, this is a powerful card, but I don't want Rafelos in my average, like, green-red mid-range deck for the most part. I want that in a deck where I do have a ton of forests, and I am planning on casting things like, you know, Ulamog or Upheaval or, like, really stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the best things I saw someone pull off in Rafelos was they had Rafelos, they had the land ramps, like your, I need to make sure that Nature's Lore and Friends are still in there.
They are, I see them.
Good. Yeah, so doing that and then using Rafelos to play the life half of Life and Death and then Crater Hoof.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. Into that.
And that was brutal.
For Brett in the chat, we are interacting with you. This is me interacting with you. we do have the chat up. I'm not going to like interrupt Aqua or the current conversation if there's something in chat, but if we have a moment, we'll come back to it. We are reading it as we're going.
Here's maybe a different angle on this question is what is
by bones
mono green or other green decks losing to in this environment? Like, are there specific things, are there specific matchups that it's really struggling with? Like, is it, if you wanted to tune up mono green, is the answer actually to think about what it's struggling with and make modifications elsewhere in the cube?
It's more just, it doesn't compete. It's not, like, it doesn't have enough density in this much, even though it is mid-range, it doesn't have enough density if white is able to drop a wide field and has the efficient spot removal against it. You're burning cards and you're not getting an advantage out of it. They just keep getting enough through to kill you. Or someone just combo wins and green's options are fairly limited. I don't really want to throw bind in here. I've considered it, but
the
kind of an odd one.
Yeah, one Canadian in chat mentioned potentially green's like lack of interaction being a problem, right? If you're, you know, almost done pack one or starting pack two and you're really heavy green, but you notice I have no removal on my heavy green deck. And this is a very combo-oriented environment, so being able to have a removal spell to reach out and interrupt one half of their combo or whatever might be really important. I could see that being a bottleneck for the mono-green deck. I do think, from what I've seen of powered vintage cubes, which is mostly the Magic Online vintage cube. And I know this is not the same kind of environment necessarily, but I do think the mono green deck tends to be extremely proactive. It tends to like not actually plan on answering much of its opponents. And okay, if you're going to play your one half of your combo piece, I'm just going to untap and play Crater Hoof on turn four and like destroy you. And so that's a question I think of like player preference. I personally, I know Anthony feels this way too. I don't have a ton of fun piloting a deck like that where I'm just like, I'm going to do my thing and hope that you don't do your thing first. But I know some players do. Some players just like playing the mono green deck and saying, yeah, I'm going to do this. And if you don't do something else bigger or better or stop me, you're going to lose.
And that does feel in line with the goals and the sort of like kind of gameplay that you're going for.
Yeah. I keep seeing the mouse overs on our good friendly two drop up there.
Oh, the collector move?
Yes. There was a game down in Vintage where I had Hymn of the Wilds on the play, and I had a turn one collector oof. My opponent drops Black Lotus. Black Lotus, Mana Crypt, Land, Sol Ring, Mox.
They played their Mana Crypt with collector oof in play?
Oh, they just scooped. They're like, they just wanted to show. I have nothing but artifacts, and I can't do anything.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I personally think those kinds of hate cards can be really interesting and dynamic and create interesting gameplay moments. I think it's entirely a matter of expectations. Like, does somebody draft a deck not realizing that there is one card that if they can't remove just makes their entire deck not function? And that can be a real big feel-bad moment. But if the understanding is like, yeah, Thalia's here for the Storm deck, Collector's here for the Mono Brown deck, and, you know, insert other... must remove kinds of threats. I mean, even like a card like Mother of Runes, I think fills into a similar space if you're like a certain type of control deck where it's like, if you can't answer his Mother of Runes on turn one, you're going to have a huge problem. So I think it could be totally fine. And
yeah, I mean, it makes a lot more sense given all the sort of gameplay goals that we're talking about here than in, for example, Uber Bear's Artifact Cube, where there it really felt like the expectation was not somebody's going to play one card that's going to shut off your whole game plan.
And we're not dragging you, Uber Bear.
Not at all.
We all learned together. We all learned together that was pretty rough. Yeah, I guess other cards in the green section that jump out to me is like not mono green cards. Like Oath of Druids definitely doesn't feel like a mono green card. Survival of the Fittest doesn't feel like a mono green card to me. Fast Bond also doesn't feel particularly mono green. Like all these cards are cards I want to combine with cards of other colors to get this powerful synergy slash combo. And I think maybe if you do want to support mono green, it's purely just a matter of density, and you might need a few more green cards just so that there are enough cards there for when the multiple green color, when the green drafters that are playing many colored green decks are fighting you for your mana dorks and your like generically good cards, that you have other stuff to fill in the gaps instead of you know, getting a late fast bond and being like, well, I have no card draw, so fast bond is kind of a cool arboreal grazer, but not much more.
Yeah, I think it sounds like in general, advising people that mono green is not a thing should be fine. So I'll probably go with that.
Perfect.
So sounds like we could have answered that.
Fix applied.
You're like, for the past 10 minutes, you've been like, stop talking. We can move on.
No. It's all very valuable. Next part, whether or not I should push mill harder.
Before we move on from green, the one card that stands out as being something that I don't expect to see in a lot of these kinds of cubes is Chatterfang. Can you talk a little bit about that? I just want to talk about squirrels, but...
So, there is a lot of incidental token creation in almost all cubes now. So, for this list, we have, 12, 17, 24, 31... 36 cards, I think, currently that create tokens.
Mm-hmm. Actually,
some of these repeated
number.
Yeah,
that's
same.
That's surprising. I would expect an even bigger number, but still, 36 is not nothing.
Yeah, and some of these are going to be repeated all year. Things like Monastery Mentor, or you have Chandra that's pooping out two tokens every turn. You've got the Raven Man, which is pooping out a bird every turn whenever you loot. All of these things just make a large number of tokens. If you draft the Torrens deck, if you go green, white, black, that thing is insane.
Okay. I know what I'm drafting when I play this cube.
Yeah. So you just go in there and just keep making tons and tons of tokens, and it is just an absolute control card. They can't keep creatures on the board. But it's definitely something that you have to be conscious of. But He is solid. He's also a warrior for the purposes of Najeela and other friends.
Interesting. Okay, I noticed Najeela as well, and I was curious about that, if that was just
the classic Najeela Chatterfang deck. I love it. Very cool.
That's what I do in CDH. One of my faves.
It's interesting here. Torrens has been good for you. That card really underperformed for me, but very different environment, obviously. So it's cool that this is able to hang with the broken stuff that other decks are doing.
Yeah, Torrens go wide is gross, especially if you either go into blue for opposition, or you go in, you pick up a 2-drop artifact, Throne of the God Pharaoh. That is a card that a lot of people under-evaluate, in my opinion.
Interesting. Yeah, I would be in that camp for sure.
Oh yeah, this is a classic like colorless aggro support here with if you're doing a go wide aggro deck. Yeah, I think this card's good. And I would want a deck with a lot of cheap creatures before I'd be excited to play it. But once I do have a lot of cheap creatures, then I'm really all in on it. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question in chat on Song of the Dryads. Currently, its interactions are probably too cute, especially if we do make green a support color rather than standalone. But most of its interactions are with things like... sorry, words are not with me today. Thespian Stage.
Trying to podcast or make videos. It's all impossible. It's so hard.
But this is why I don't do that. That's why I have mad respect for you guys, being able to do this consistently on the fly. Song of Adria's Thespian Stage is good times.
Oh,
it does work with Devoted Druid, right?
What does it...
Fandwick is pointing out.
What does it do with any of these cards? So with Thespian Stage, does it allow you to make a copy of a thing that's no longer a land when it's not enchanted? Is that how layers work?
Yes. So let's say your opponent goes in and they do Tinker Blightsteel. You go in, you Song of Adria's or Blightsteel, mm-hmm. you have your Thespian Stage become a copy of their land. So it becomes a copy of it, but without the enchantment. Thus, the Thespian Stage becomes Blightsteel.
That's pretty cool. Wild. And if you're in it for the big story moments, that seems like a great source of the very rare but very cool story. And then with Devoted Druid, yeah, it's no longer a creature, so it can't die, so you just dump a bunch of -1/-1 counters on it?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. So it's make mid-tier / low-tier removal with the upside of having these cool combos and synergies. That's interesting.
But it may be too janky. It may not warrant it.
This is the kind of removal that I do value a lot higher in an environment with tons of cheat combos, right? Yeah. Like, I just want a answer to your Tinkered Blightsteel Colossus. I don't care how inelegant it is. I don't care that it's 3 mana and that it gives you a land back. Like all those things I think are really bad if you're playing fair magic. But when you're not playing fair magic, I'll take any removal I can get that's going to remove the thing I have to get rid of. So I think this is probably okay here. And I think, again, if you're playing for those cool long tail of stories, then yeah, it's pretty sick.
Yeah, if we do want to keep it and pump it up, and if we were to cut Rufles, I would put Devoted Druid back in, because we already have Swords to Ride Shares, aka Swift Reconfiguration.
Yep.
So giving another option to allow Devoted Druid to go infinite green, I could do that.
That feels very appropriate to this cube to me, to have the Devoted Druid in there, because it's another fair card that could just be a mana dork mm-hmm. in a pinch, but has all these interesting combo applications. So I think that's really appropriate here.
Okay, cool. Thank you, guys.
So Jesse Bear, welcome to the stream. All right, what's the next question?
Mill. Currently, Mill is viable. It wins a lot. The easiest mill, of course, is Storm Mill off of Brain Freeze, but going in there and running Ashiok has been solid. There's a handful of other pieces. There's also ways of filtering this. I abuse the tag system of Cube Cobra very heavily. So you can go in there and do like tag colon quote tag theme colon mill. Yeah. And that'll go in there and show stuff.
No one look at me typing, okay? No one look at me typing.
If you think talking is hard.
No, well, the problem is that I have a keyboard with a different layout that I use 95% of the time, and I'm not using that right now because I can't have that over here at the streaming setup, and this keyboard's a different layout. Look, I promise I'm a good typist normally.
So not everything appears to be tagged, so shame on me.
I was saying Mesmeric Orb, not in her theme mill. Interesting.
Yeah, shame on me. I did not, when I re-added it, I didn't add the tag back in.
That's totally fine. Here, I'll do this.
It's fixed.
Omil. There you go. Got them all. So what's the question about mill?
So, specifically, things like Mesmeric Orb, they do well at negating a lot of top of library tutor strats, but alternatively, I could swap it out for something like Altar of the Brood.
And you do have Assault Monolith and Grim Monolith, right? So you do have the... I guess Grim Monolith doesn't go infinite with Orb, but Assault Monolith does go infinite with Orb if you want to mill.
Assault Monolith does, and so you can get a Oracle win off that way. But the other alternative is Tasha's Hideous Laughter, which, given the low curve of this cube, is really brutal.
It's just a big one-shot mill, right? Yeah.
Mill until you hit 20 mana value.
And this is a card you're considering adding, right? It's not in there right now, or is it? Did I miss it?
It is not in right now.
I'm personally less excited about Tasha's Hideous Laughter or, you know, other things like... what's the black-white, or blue-black one I'm thinking of?
The Mill 10?
Yeah, the Mill 10.
Yeah.
It's got a guy whose brain is like, wah!
It's a cool card. I don't know if I'm as excited about these one-shot effects, because sometimes they are just like, oh, I just win the game because I cast this one card, which I feel like you are going for that kind of like swingy gameplay, but it's still a lot more exciting when it's like, oh, you put two cards together, and now something happened, rather than just like, you drafted that one card.
My favorite mill deck I ever drafted into cube, and granted, there aren't that many mill decks I've drafted into cube, but in Daniel's Reading Rainbow Cube, I'm not sure if this is still the case, but in the early days, he had the Glimpse the Unthinkable. I just remember what it's called. Oh, also Tentacle Monster posted it. Glimpse the Unthinkable.
I was thinking that, and I thought that was a different card.
Why didn't you just say it? Stop being so embarrassed. Glimpse the Unthinkable. There's also a split card where one half of the split card is very similar.
No, you're thinking
similar.
Of a different one.
No, I'm not.
Are you sure?
There's a mill split card where one half like mills 8 or something instead of 10.
Saying. I see what
and
you're saying. By so, is also.
So you basically can take that and the split card, and I also drafted like 4 different ways to get spells back from my graveyard, mm-hmm. like Eternal Witness style effects. But they were all gold cards that were all janky, no one's ever heard of. Like some Jeskai, Warden, Lotus guy, whatever. No, it's not Andy. What's not Andy?
Are you thinking Breaking and Entering?
Yeah, Breaking and Entering.
Glimpse the Unthinkable is not the split card, but there's a split card
right.
with a Glimpse the Unthinkable effect.
That's what I'm saying. See, look.
It's a mill 8.
Top 8. It's literally what I said is mill 8.
Look at that.
Fandwick, shut up in the chat. anyway, I thought that was cool because it only took drafting one or two cards, and then the rest of the cards were like generically useful. I'm just giving you a hard time, Joe. Don't worry about it. All the Eternal Witness style effects go in lots of different decks, right?
Yeah.
They're not mill cards per se, but they were dramatically recontextualized by the presence of one or two cards in my pool. And I wonder if you could have a similar thing here where, you know, I mean, Brain Freeze certainly fits that category, right? Like, you're not just going to play a fair Brain Freeze, but in a Storm deck, it just all of a sudden makes your entire deck about milling somebody with only one card, just Brain Freeze. I like that kind of mill. I think the other really interesting challenge with mill, which is present here, and I think you just have exactly Emrakul, is that the counterplay against mill tends to be like all or nothing. It's like, if you have your Emrakul, then my mill win condition is probably entirely off the table, unless I also have some Grave Hate that I can time at exactly the right moment and then like mill you again. It gets really, really challenging if there's actually some counterplay against it. So that would be my question for you is like, is mill predominant enough? Does it show up enough that players are aware of that in the draft and thinking like, what am I going to do against my opponent if they're trying to mill me out? And then is that counterplay something you found to be dynamic and interesting, or is it just kind of like they have it or they don't?
Yeah.
The counterplay has happened. I've seen people bring in Progenitus against Spring Priest.
That one just shuffles itself back in, not your entire library, so it just says that you are going to draw Progenitus every turn for the rest of the game if you have a way to loot, right?
That, or that you get one more, well, not if you're going to loot, because you're going to draw from an empty library and lose, but guarantees you're going to get one more turn.
Okay, so you're just getting one turn after the Brain Freeze, sure. That, to me, is kind of cool. Like, if someone's siding in Progenitus just to get one more turn against the Brain Freeze Storm deck, like, I'm kind of into that. More so than, like, I sided an Emrakul and now your deck doesn't function anymore because I just have Emrakul, which is a challenge. And Emrakul feels like it's really important that it be in this cube, Like, I would not, I can't imagine a cube like this that's powered and, you know, pushed to the limits like this one is, and not including the biggest, baddest baddie in all of Magic. Yeah, no sub button yet, Jesse. I'm nervous to flip the switch. I don't know. Money. It's the whole thing. So yeah, I don't know. What was the question again?
Mill.
Was the question just mark? Mill question mark? Was that the whole question?
It's about where should I focus on the mill. So we have things like Memory Jar, which has the intersection with Storm, among other things, as well as Welder decks and being able to abuse it to mill people out. There's a question on Tasha's Hideous Laughter, and there's also a question if we want to go minor changes, if we want to put Altar of a Brood in instead of Mesmeric Orb.
Altar of the Brood is the one that mills whenever something enters the battlefield, right? Am I getting that right?
Whenever a permanent enters the battlefield under your control, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that also just turns your like token making deck into. That one has a lot of overlap, I think, with Altar of Dementia. Like those two, I think you could put in like a random creature deck and become a mill deck pretty interestingly, just right out of the board or something. Yeah. So I think the real question here is, like, are you happy with where mill is right now? I'm assuming not, based on the question you're asking, because you're proposing a couple different directions you could go with it. What about its current iteration is not working for you?
Speed.
Right. Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, I can see that.
So Tasha's would be that this is definitely going to give us the speed.
Is Tasha's targeted? Can you just mill yourself and then Thoracle yourself?
Don't know.
Each opponent, not targeted. Boo! Bring back targeted spells instead of making
this
it
is
your
magic
opponent
for an
or whatever.
Eternal world.
So I think it's cool that your current mill stuff, maybe like Mesmeric Orb, Altar of Dementia aside, is also just like generically useful cards, right? Like,
right.
I don't think of Brain Freeze as a mill card. I think of it as a storm card. It's a payoff for your storm deck. Memory Jar, like you mentioned, has all kinds of other applications that aren't strictly speaking a mill deck, and I think it's very cool if you have all these cards that people could decide to combine to make a mill deck, but it's not like this card only goes in that deck. I think it's what Tasha's Hideous Laughter would be. I suppose you could also maybe side it in against somebody that's playing a combo, and you're basically playing like a really strange like surgical extraction the hard way, where you're like, hopefully I get one of your combo pieces by milling most of your library. Maybe it's exiling too, so it's just gone, which is powerful in a combo environment here like
True.
This. That's the only application I could see for it, but it feels much more on rails compared to your other existing mill support. So unless you really want to make it more of a thing, I don't feel the strong pull of Tasha's Hideous Laughter, but also I'm a big fan of like put it in for a while, see if it's fun, and if it's not fun, take it out. Sounds like you play this cube quite a bit, so you get in a lot of reps with it. You would have a pretty good sense after a few drafts maybe of, is anyone drawn to this deck? Is it functional? How is it actually working? The other context where I've been playing with mill lately is in the Neoclassical cube, where I want...
Just up in Vegas.
Sorry, did you cut off for a second? Say it again. Oh, no. Are you there, Aqua? Aqua?
Oh, no.
It says you're still there. In the call. Please hang tight, everybody.
Yeah, Underworld Breach is another cool thing to intersect with the mill, especially like the symmetrical mill.
Breach is a messed up card. LSV has been doing nothing but drafting Underworld Breach decks. And
makes sense.
Totally defensible. Like, it's so good with Brain Freeze, so good with Frantic Search, so good with so many cards that just basically goes infinite immediately. And the fact that you can rebuy it kind of trivially compared to Yawgmoth's Will is not nothing either. You get to get a couple bites of the apple.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of times you just, like, do your whole thing, and then you just repeal your Underworld Breach at the end of turn, and then just do it again next turn. It's,
sure.
If you even need a next turn, which you probably don't, because it's really good.
Okay, are you able to hear me now?
Yeah, you're back. If you want to spend some time dragging Xfinity, you're welcome to. We in this house, we hate Xfinity. All my homies hate Xfinity, so we can drag them if you want.
Yeah, not my favorite. Please don't take down my connection again for saying so.
Yeah, it currently shows on our stream that we have no viewers. People are talking in chat, though, so... did the stream die, freeze for you all, too? Are we back? Chat?
Do we even... Are we opaque?
Maybe it was my internet, not
can
your
you
internet.
See through us?
It better now. It did. Hey. Okay, who knows? Dude, I don't know how anything works. It's still streaming. It's still recording. Whatever. What were we saying? Mill, this, Mill. That. Oh, so in the neoclassical cube,
yeah.
I've been playing with Mill, and I have a very different vision for that in that cube than what you're doing here, which is that I want it to be a grindy control win condition, mm-hmm. right? I just want people, there's no fast Mill, there's no like Mill combo, it is just, you know, I'm going to play a deck that's nothing but answers, and I'm going to put a grindstone in there, and whenever I don't need to use a counterspell or removal spell, I'm going to put that mana in a grindstone and just eventually Mill you out. And I've been having a lot of fun in that cube with a lot of these other kinds of similar overlapping things like you're describing. Like there's Memory Jar in that cube as well for similar reasons, actually. Let me see if I can actually pull it up. I don't have my whole cube labeled like you, but we can maybe look at it real quick and just get a sense of what else there is there for Mill stuff. But Memory Jar is there for Mill. I also have just like things like Wheel of Fortune, which is there. That's a huge maybe board. I really think they should have the maybe board styled very differently in visually than the main board.
I've been very confused by with this.
It's very easy to get confused. So yeah, cards like Wheel of Fortune and Memory Jar are there for like other kinds of combos, but also just say effectively Mill 7, right? Which is powerful. So I have also been experimenting with that and having a fairly good time with it. Things like Cephalid Coliseum, very low cost of inclusion Mill card that you can then recur with land recursion stuff, which is kind of cool. What else do I have in here for the like overlapping Mill deck stuff? I'm on the spot. It's hard to think of all this stuff immediately.
On Burial Rites?
I feel that.
I swear there's more. I swear to God. I also just have, you know, just big, the dumb one that works in my environment that wouldn't work in yours is just big targeted card draw, right? So I have Stroke of Genius, and I also just recently added Brain Geyser, which, you know, obviously primarily card draw, but also, you can point it at your opponent and just mm-hmm. kill them, which is, that's like the, that's exactly, Windfall, another example here of that kind of stuff. That's exactly what I want the Mill to be in my cube, and so I've also been experimenting with it and been pretty happy with it so far, just as a, like, put in a couple of cards, and then otherwise use cards that are already playable in their own right. Like, your deck has Stroke of Genius and Brain Geyser in it, and you were playing a bunch of counterspells already, just throw in a grindstone and you'll get there. And maybe in your cube the equivalent of that is like, yeah, you're playing a cool combo deck with a bunch of tokens and stuff, and then you could just throw in an Altar of Dementia and an Altar of the Brood, and now you're also a Mill deck if that's better for what your matchup is. So I think that's the way to do it personally, is have it be like a one or two card thing you can audible into in another functional deck, and it recontextualizes cards to make them function as Mill cards essentially.
Okay, that makes sense.
Thanks for the follow, Joe. Finally,
I do really like having Ashiok. He's been great for that because he serves as both tutor nerf and Mill. So if you're playing that harder control deck, it does solid.
Yeah, Ashiok. This is a cool Ashiok. Ashiok is very cool. Such a cool character. I wish I liked any of the cards for my own cubes, but the character is very cool. Okay, that's the Mill question. I think,
yes.
Addressed.
Yep.
We've solved all your right. Mill puzzle.
Next one, Persist Enablers.
Yeah, let's talk Persist combo.
Yeah, currently this is Metallic Mimic, Rhythm of the Wild, and Luminous Brood Moth. And debating cutting Brood Moth in favor of either Anafenza or Henge. Anafenza and Henge both used to be in. Anafenza was fragile, so unless you were playing it and going off at that time, it tended not to stick around.
Yeah, I think for combo purposes, I just want the cheapest versions of all these effects.
Yeah.
So the cheaper the better, as far as I'm concerned. Like, Broodmoth is cool because it's also a 3-4 flyer, but if you're using it for a combo piece, then who cares? And is this the kind of environment where you're just going to beat down with a 3-4 flyer in a fair way and have that be a functional win condition? Maybe. I mean, my experience with degenerate combos and stuff comes from my own degenerate micro cube, where a lot of games do devolve into like, you answered my combo, I answered yours, and now I'm killing you with this Mutavault or whatever, or Mimisha's Factory. So maybe that's the kind of role this thing plays. Like, hey, we both, you know, had our combos answered, but now I'm left with a 3-4 flyer and you're left with some dinky little dude, and so I'm going to kill you. But if you want to optimize the combo, I would definitely favor the cheapest versions of the effects, and also tutors to get them, obviously.
There used to be a higher wrath density, so Broodmoth was wrath insurance.
Got it, yeah.
Makes sense.
But the wrath density is lower in my list.
I also wonder if, like, at 4 mana, is that a good place to have wrath insurance? Like, if I'm an aggro deck and I'm curving out, and if I'm on the draw, I'm just going to get wrath before I can even play Maluminous Broodmoth. Compared to something like, do you have the Spirit of the Spirit in here? Which is what I'm talking about.
Selfless Spirit.
Selfless Spirit is another one, I think.
Spirit of the Spirit.
Oh, no.
You get the idea. So yeah, I think I would not look at Luminous Broodmoth and think this is really good wrath insurance for my deck because it's so expensive. At the point of the game where I'm able to cast Luminous Broodmoth, my opponent may have already wrathed me in a way that matters.
And Offense also sounds cool with the like aggressive green-white deck, although white-white's a little bit difficult. But
Joe is mentioning all the other interactions with Luminous Broodmoth with things like sneak attack. You get to sneak in and something else in play.
Oh, yes.
And everything. So,
that's cool.
So there are other situations where Broodmoth can do things that other enablers maybe cannot.
How does it work with Persist?
So when something dies, you choose which comes back with.
Basically, you get two death triggers, and you get to stack them however you want, so either one resolves, and you can either have it come back with a flying counter or come back with its -1/-1 counter.
I see. So you don't actually let it persist. I got it. Yep.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you let it persist half the time.
Sure.
If you alternate back and forth.
Back and forth forever.
Back and forth forever. Hey, what's up, Big Machero? Yes, this is going to be on YouTube later, if that's cool with you, Aqua.
Absolutely.
Cool. I'm also going to save this recording in case we ever get sick or something and can't do a podcast some week. We'll just drop this audio on them in the feed. keep that in the chamber. So I think I know that the 540 did a really good episode on Persist combo, which you may or may not have listened to. That kind of goes pretty in depth about all the different pieces. I've never actually put it in one of my cubes. I tested it briefly in the Durant Micro Cube, but that was 4 years ago when the support was, I think, a little bit different than it is today, or at least the ideal support for it. But I love seeing Metallic Mimic. I think this is like one of the best pieces because it's colorless, easy to put in any deck. It's only 2 mana. I think that's really appealing. It's also just great in any kind of aggro deck that has a lot of the same creature types running around, so that's cool. Big Mac Hero, that makes a lot more sense than Big Machero. So Big Mac Hero it is. So yeah, I think that's great. Broodmoth is cool that it has all these other interactions. I still think that if I were drafting the Persist combo deck, I would look at Broodmoth as like, scraping the bottom of the barrel. I need another way to enable this, but I wouldn't be drawn to it highly. The same way I would any of the 2 mana cards, like the Maliras or Anafenzas or whatever. And then, your sack outlets are kind of... Ooh, excuse me, man. You have the... Altar of Dementia mm-hmm. is a sack outlet for it. You also
Altar of Dementia, Phyrexian Altar, Viscera Seer, Goblin Bombardment.
So you've got plenty of ways to sacrifice those things and actually kill them. I think this is a cool deck to include in a cube like this where combos are welcome and these creatures also have roles in other more fair decks where you can, again, just kind of turn your fair deck into a combo deck with a couple of cards that otherwise, have other purposes. So I think it's appropriate here. I would maybe even add more support like you're maybe suggesting. And if I as a player, am always looking for the cheaper cards for my combo, even if they don't have other cool interactions.
Okay.
And yeah, like you're saying in chat, Devoted Druid coming back, I think, makes all of those even more appealing.
Yeah.
You get the Vizier of Remedies in there. That's also 2 mana, 1 and a white, right, for Vizier of Remedies.
Yeah, but it's too narrow, in my opinion.
Okay.
Let's pull that guy up. That one is the narrowest one. Well, not as narrow as Malira, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just -1/-1 counters.
There was a while back where I had Solemnity, which, boy howdy, that has the weirdest rules interactions you can imagine.
Yeah, that one's got some funky rulings on it.
Yes.
This one, if you're not worried about confusing players, this one feels more appropriate to a cube like this to me than something like Vizier of Remedies does, because it also has other stuff that it just randomly nerfs. It's like can be a powerful hate card. I think it's kind of interesting, but I also think
also a Depths enabler.
Yep, Depths enabler. Death's Neighbor just, you know, hoses all of the... I guess it doesn't hose Planeswalker specifically because it only artifact enchantments and lands. Yeah, so...
But if you use Song of the Dryads to turn their Planeswalker into a land...
That's true. But they don't pop off of it. It just can't be put on it anymore.
Damn.
So it's not going to lose all of its loyalty when you do that.
Hmm.
Yeah, Fanwick also mentioning that there is, like, you know, Bloated Contaminator and stuff in the cube, which is... Kind. I mean, that's technically poison counters, right? Like, Malira does interact with that in some funky way.
I'll think about it. All right.
Hear that, Joe? He'll think about it.
Next question, asked as awkwardly as I can. Do I need more Viagra?
That sounds like a personal question.
For those who are not familiar with my Reanimator theory, it's about having a balance of milkshakes, Viagra, and bombs. Milkshakes bring your boys to the yard, Viagra brings the dead things back to life, and bombs go off.
That's not really what Viagra does, just for the record. You could go with, like, Dr. Frankenstein or something. How many Dr. Frankensteins do you have?
Milkshakes, Dr. Frankenstein.
So the question is, do you need more ways to reanimate creatures? And I assume you have all of the Murderer's Row of classic ones. We have Reanimate here. I assume I'm going to find Animate Dead at some point. There's Animate Dead.
Yes. The ones that aren't in here are specifically Exhume, Makeshift Mannequin, and any newer options I may not be familiar with.
Okay, you do have Necromancy. The only new option is Persist, which is actually kind of... I'll make sure I remember the actual rules text of Persist now. Because is that actually going to work with some of the stuff we were just talking about? This actually is kind of interesting... Maybe it doesn't really matter with any of the enablers for the Persist combo deck, because you're just gonna not get the one counter, which is kind of nice, I guess, but that's not a huge downside of your reanimation target. I know this is a very appealing reanimation spell for people these days in powered cubes. I don't know what your spread of threats look like with exactly. I mean, Archon I think is the best target, and Persist hits Archon, so I would probably be on. Oh, I'm seeing in the chat here that Persist is pretty terrible and inconsistent. So maybe I'm wrong. My inclination would be that Persist is good, and I would want it. And that just means that I'm a little lower on Grizzlebrand if I already have Persist in my pool. But I guess it depends on exactly what kind of targets I've got. That's the only one I'm aware of. People are mentioning Dance of the Dead as well. That one is also 2 mana and has some other funky restriction or side quest.
Yeah, you have to pay B1 to untap.
Right. That's kind of a bummer to me. But look at that big old block of text. Look at that rules text box. You love to see it.
Novels of a card.
It is got cool art. It's got that going for it.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, so question. How good do you want the Reanimator deck to be? Or, maybe better question, how often do you want it to come together in the draft?
It comes together consistently. It has a decent win rate right now. I'm just looking at other cubes sort of around me on the cube map, or other things that I've played in other people's powered lists. And I've noted that I seem to run lower. There was a couple of people who've drafted it over like the last few months that have made comments that they saw fewer payoffs for Reanimator than they expected.
What other ways are there to... Because you do have Sneak Attack, I see. You do have Oath of Druids. Like, how many other decks are things like Archon of Cruelty and Grizzlebrand going into? Because if it's no other decks, or very rarely other decks, Flash works with Archon, that's true. If it's very rarely other decks, then that's where I want to see more actual support for reanimation spells, because I would expect that those are that's how I'm supposed to use those cards, and then it feels like my deck's just missing a couple things. The three you have is definitely, I think, minimal, right? We have Necromancy. I guess Recurring Nightmare kind of counts. That's a very different card, I think. But Necromancy, Animate Dead, and Reanimate are the main ones we're working with here, right? Yeah. I think a couple more would be appropriate, and I certainly think that between Persist or Dance of the Dead, or I saw a couple other ones mentioned in chat here.
Exhume is a possibility?
Yeah, Exhume is definitely the best one I think that's missing in terms of raw power level. And the question is, like, how often do you get got by it? And I don't have a good sense of his kick off, and your opponent would, like, in response, loot away their own big fat creature, and then you'd feel bad about it. But that one definitely is the, like, more powerful one. At 2 mana, unconditional, yeah. You know, reanimation is hard to come by.
Yeah. All right, try to limit my questions here. Okay, probably exam. Oh yeah, that definitely not running show and tell. I don't like show and tell.
Show and tell is a very particular kind of card for a very particular kind of person. Oh, life death, Oinkinator. That's a really good call. You do have life death in here.
Oh yes.
Where is that one?
Both sides have done wonderful things.
Yeah, life death is powerful. Yeah, so you have hybrid. Four existing reanimation spells in here then, and you're drafting the entire pool every time, so I think it's reasonable to expect your reanimator player to get three of those probably, if they are drafting properly and reading the table, and that in combination with things like Vampiric Tutor and Demonic Tutor and stuff. Yeah, I think you're kind of like right on the cusp of like robust support for this deck to me.
Yeah, this is probably good enough as is. Maybe add either Dance or Exhume. But probably good enough then.
Yeah. I think you would know better than we would if it's good enough in terms of just how it's performing. That I can't answer.
All right, the next big one, Wraps. So currently Deluge, Meat Hook, Fiery Confluence, Dam, Rolling Earthquake, Fire Covenant. I feel like that's enough. Occasionally I get people who want more.
I've drafted some Vintage Cubes before. I've never drafted the literal Magic Online Vintage Cube Fanwick, but, you know, just not that one.
Yeah. The Miko Vintage in addition runs Wrath of God, Damnation. There's, what is it, the 6-mana Elspeth, I think, and Winds of Abandon. So they're pretty deep.
I think that list seems reasonable to me. My only real touchstone for this is the Bun Magic Cube, which... Again, smaller cube, but it doesn't actually matter the percentage it's Wrath. It matters the raw number, because we're both drafting the entire cube every single time. And I am on Balance, Terminus, Damnation, Toxic Deluge, Wrath of God, and Supreme Verdict. That's all of mine, which is, I think, one short of the number you gave, but you counted something like Fire Covenant, which is, it is a Wrath, but maybe a little more conditional, depending on what your opponent's doing. So I think that's enough to support a couple good... control decks at a table, like two control decks, one or two good control decks, if that's what you're looking to support. I don't know how often your combo decks are also just going to run a Wrath or, you know, draft a Wrath mid-pack because they want to have some play against creature decks. Is that something that comes up pretty often, or do you only have control decks that are playing these Wraths, basically?
Honestly, the most consistent win deck is white-red. Just white-red, Load of Ground. Beat the crap out of you before you can go off.
Yeah. I think Jesse has a good comment in chat here, which is that being able to interact with the stack seems much more important here than being able to Wrath at sorcery speed. A lot of these combos are just going to kill you at instant speed before you get to untap. So, you know, untapping and Wrathing is not really a good answer. You'd much rather have any kind of counterspell or even instant speed target removal. So, yeah, I think this feels right. If anything, maybe a little deep, honestly, for the list that you're running here.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good call, Jesse. Thank you.
Does Meat Hook Massacre do anything interesting? Just like, are there combos that it just counters by being in play?
Persist combos. They just die.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think Meat Hook Massacre is not as a card I usually enjoy playing with, but in this context as like a Wrath and then also an interactive piece, you know, in a more... I don't know, a more interactive way that's not just kill all your stuff, but counter your combos kind of cool.
It's also just good in the persist deck. Like, it's just also, it's a win condition. If you're persisting, you just kill your opponent with it.
Right.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
All right. Next one is Burn. Specifically, do I need to be running more density on it, like Burst Lightning, Firebolt type effects, or is what's fair adequate? And if I did run more Burn, what am I coming for it? I feel like it, I don't run a dedicated burn deck. It is easy to play red deck wins. So you can play mono red and just go to town in this. There's adequate prowess and whatnot, especially if you splash white for a couple cards. But it comes together consistently. I just don't know if I need more explicit burn versus aggro.
I mean, I definitely don't think you need anything. So the question is, are you happy with what your red decks are currently doing? And...
I personally am.
then I think, no, I think you're great.
Yeah, great.
You did it. You did it perfectly. Congratulations.
The one swap that I'm fairly confident I want to make is based on, who was it who said that? Somebody put up their top five list of AI cast into a fire. And I was like, I hadn't considered that as highly. So I'm thinking about swapping cast into the fire for Ember Shield Breaker.
Sure. This is the new one from
Exile
Lord of the
Artifact
Rings.
Or a Twin Bolt kind of thing.
Yes. Or Force Bolt, yeah.
Two things, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense in a powered cube, I think. Being able to exile an artifact seems really relevant here. It's obviously very similar to a braid in some ways, but if you want both, you want both. That's cool. The only thing I might say reburn is my personal taste is in a cube like this, incinerate is obviously good. The lack of regeneration might matter. I don't think it does actually from looking at your list. But like,
not really.
But I would rather this be something like a burst lightning than an incinerate, which is just a worse lightning bolt. Because burst lightning is not strictly worse than lightning bolt, and it's pretty much worse, but there's also plenty of times where you're top decking with your burn deck and the four damage really matters, instead of that being three damage and it's worth all paying all that extra mana. So my taste would be to, you know, carve out some space, cut incinerate for some other burn spell that has some other depth to it. And burst lightning is like the shallowest example I can give. You're already on lava dart and stuff. I think Price of Progress is a really cool, like, dedicated burn card, as long with Fire Blast. Yeah, I think Skewer the Critics also, as Oinkinator is mentioning in chat, is like a really worse lightning bolt. I think one of those being Burst Lightning or Fire Bolt or some other card that would also work just as well in burn. I mean, honestly, Fire Bolt is probably just better than Skewer the Critics in burn, because it's four damage instead of three damage, and, you know, the inevitability of being able to flash it back, I think, is very reasonably costed, and the front side is totally fair. One mana for two damage is good, so I could see shaving these kinds of cards that I'm sure are not, you know, sparking a ton of joy or inspiring your red players and, like, you know, making them pump their fist and say they wield the card they wanted, because they're kind of just boring and replaceable, and I think that space could be used up for more cool stuff.
Okay.
And Chad is mentioning cards like Unholy Heat and Flame Slash. I do love Unholy Heat and Flame Slash, but they are definitely not burn cards in the same sense. They can't go to your opponent's face, and so I think of them as like really good removal spells. But if we are talking about burn to try and like make the occasional, you know, hard red deck wins or like burn deck with Price of Progress be a thing, I don't think those are really contributing to that.
All right, next one. Is Slaver Lock too parasitic?
Is it just Mindslaver and Academy Ruins? What else do you have?
No Academy Ruins, but you have your Goblin Welder, you have Emery that are able to go in there and recur it. Now, the thing is, Welder and Emery are both useful on their own. It's just a question of, is Mindslaver still valuable enough?
I don't think the word parasitic is really appropriate here. I mean, it's like this card requires some other cards to function in the same way that, like,
what do you mean?
Reanimate.
All you need is 10 mana and it works.
Well, I mean, yeah, you also only need 8 mana or 9 mana to cast your Grizzlebrand or whatever.
Exactly.
So I think the question is just, do you like the play patterns of it? Because they're very particular. And some people really like the texture of taking their opponent's turn, recontextualizing all of the cards, seeing how much damage they can do to them. Other play groups, like, people just scoop immediately as soon as Mindslaver is activated because they're like, I don't want this to happen. It really bums me out. And I think it's a huge, you know, it's a big no fun. So to me, that's the question here. I don't think it's a question of, like, it fits elegantly alongside Welder and Emery. I think that's all you need to make this card really appealing. You have the big ramp decks you have to, like, just ramp it out if you want to. You have Welder to cheat it in. You also have Tinker, I assume. I haven't actually looked, but this...
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, it's also can be a Tinker target. I like it as, like, a Tinker toolbox thing, where if you see your opponent has some ways you could really wreck them with a Mindslaver, you could go get it. But yeah, I think it's just entirely a matter of, like, if you like what the card lets you do, because it is very unique in what it lets you do, and that's the appeal of it entirely. It's certainly not anywhere near the most powerful thing to do with any of those cards, right? If we're talking about optimizing for the power of Tinker or Goblin Welder or Emery, I don't think Mindslaver is in the conversation, but
yeah,
it's a cool thing to do, and if this cube is partially a place where you can play with cards you can't play other places and do cool stuff and have these awesome story moments, then Mindslaver kind of fits.
Okay. That's enough for me to think on. I think the last thing is just Atraxa Grand Unifier.
Yeah.
Is it good enough?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's really good. I think Legacy is showing us that it is definitely a new top tier reanimation target. I think some people in chat probably have more experience with these kinds of cards. I have not actually cast that card yet, so this is my entirely just looking at it. But yeah, chat is confirming Bonkers, better than Grizzlebrand, blah, blah, blah. I think the card's really good. So it definitely feels like it would be at home here and, you know, totally makes sense here. And it was mentioned earlier as a reason not to run Persist specifically because it's another really good reanimation target that is legendary. So to go back to that conversation, I think if you do end up adding Atraxa, then I would definitely do Exhum or Dance of the Dead or something instead of Persist. But yeah, also Green Sun Zenith target, which is great. Natural Order target. I think it's really cool.
Cool. And that was my question list. Thank you, guys.
So I feel like we just said to all of those is put more cards in. So I feel like we've only done half of the job.
Oh, no. So Devoted Druid is coming in over Rathalos. I'm going to test Tasha's over Mesmeric. I know that that can result in field bads, but it is more in line with what I want for that space. As far as the Anafenza versus Broodmoth, I still need to think about it more. Mm-hmm. Going to test First Lightning over Incinerate. Bringing in for things like Atraxa and Flash and possibly Exhum, if I do want to bring those in, need to figure out what the swaps would be on those. Phyrexian Dragon Engine should already be in here.
Flash Atraxa is good. You got to get that in there. Yeah, I saw Phyrexian Dragon Engine. It's in here.
Yeah, it's in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in the red section.
And for those that are listening or watching the video, we are responding to chat too, which is why maybe it sounds like we're addressing a question that you didn't hear asked. It's
because that is what
chat.
Is happening.
I could have put chat on screen. You know, all these streamers do that, and I'm always afraid someone's going to, like, just, you know, say something naughty in there, which maybe I shouldn't be, but it feels weird
no,
to me.
No, you should
just
be afraid of that.
Just put the chat up there. Oh, partially because we have no moderation team right now. It's just me hoping to right click on something. Oh, no, someone said something naughty. No, Aqua no. did it. Cool. I really hope I'm excited to play this cube at KubeCon. I'd love to get to touch these cards and see these awesome alters and customs in place.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I will, again, just like last year, I'm going to be in the free area the entire time.
So you're like not playing in the main event at all? You're just not going to queue up for any of the cubes in the main event?
I may. It's, how to say this, I'm not that great of a player.
Hey, welcome to the club. Hey, you're among friends here.
And I don't really have a super competitive streak, so shooting for the champion, like, I'm just not that great. So I want to play a diverse range of other cubes. I just don't know about the I don't know about playing in the main event. Like, I'll probably play in a handful, assuming I can find things interesting. Last year, there were specific cubes that I really, really wanted to play in the main event, but there are others where I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the range choice code worked really well, though, so you could basically just choose here the things I want to play, and you're going to get...
I do have a couple notes about the ranked choice voting.
Okay.
Namely...
Let's talk about it later.
I already shared them all with Gwen. He already knows, but...
You wanted the field to have a better placeholder, or...
Well, that was one thing. Mostly, I just wanted to be able to, like, make a ranked choice at the beginning,
yes,
and then have... Instead of having to update it for every single... draft where
right.
It's like, oh, I got that cube I wanted. Now
just
I have to go
like,
make that
my
not
choice,
my choice anymore.
And then also a no duplicates button. So if you've already been in one, you don't get put in it the same. So you don't have to update your list.
And also being able to do it for
yeah.
the entire event instead of just each
correct,
individual
correct,
draft
yeah.
session. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And I may definitely be an outlier, but I would love to be there. Hey, if I can't get in any of these, I'm okay not playing. Rather than
yeah.
jamming me into another cube.
Yeah.
That's a good feedback.
I hope they got that feedback, too, and maybe by that same idea. It's kind of interesting. Like, I want to play one of these three or none. That would be kind of interesting to build into it. Well, cool. I hope this was helpful. I don't know. I mean, it's worth... Maybe we should have given this at the top, but Anthony and I are definitely not the most experienced folks with powerful cubes
no.
like this. I think a lot of people in chat, for example, are much more experienced with casting these cards in this combination.
Good thing
so,
we have all those. Great people.
Yeah. The high-level... design questions, like, you know, fixing density, that's where I feel more comfortable. The, like, should I have more reanimation spells? Maybe. Won't reanimated be better? I don't know. It's hard to say. Oh, no. Hung up on us again.
Uh-oh.
or maybe...
No, I'm here, sorry.
Oh, good. Okay, good. I'm always just afraid the internet's going to go out. You never know with this Xfinity stuff.
Xfinity!
Cool. Well, we don't have to keep you the rest of the night. If this was helpful, then I'm glad we got to chat about your cube. This was fun. It's nice to talk about a different environment and think about a cube that I'm not always thinking about, like mine and Anthony's and other ones in our playgroup that are constantly occupying my mind. So, yeah, beautiful cube, beautiful collection of cards. Hope to play it someday.
Can I ask a difficult question?
Shoot.
What is currently your favorite altar in the cube?
Oh, that's a good one.
It's probably the most meta card you'll ever see. Plateau.
Scroll.
Red, white.
Is this a plateau with the other of the two arts painted onto?
This is Drew Tucker painting Cornelius Broody's art for Plateau over his own art for Plateau.
Nice.
That is a deep cut.
What happened? They like had the alpha printing with one illustration and then they lost it or something. So with beta,
correct.
It's a different. Very cool.
So, so they had it for Alpha Beta Unlimited, but for Revised, didn't have it. So they used Cornelius Broody's art that they had commissioned for Ice Age. So they put that on there. But they didn't change the artist credit. So it still said Drew Tucker.
Oh,
so people,
okay.
This is
everyone has.
This is the best alter in the cube. This is great.
Everyone's bringing them to Drew Tucker going, can you sign this? Can you sign this? Can you sign this? And there was a while many years ago where he was getting super salty going like, I didn't paint this. Like, well,
I mean,
can you sign it anyway? And he's like no.
Like, I understand both sides of that. I understand the people not knowing the history of the card and also understand Drew being like, not my art. Also, maybe he hates the painting and thinks it's bad. And people are like, you think I did this? I do good
oh,
art.
No. He and Kinnear's pretty good friends. It's all good. So I was down there at Vegas one year and I'm like, hey, I don't know what I want altered on this because the alters are always artist choice. And so he's like, you know what I want to do? I want to effing paint Cornelius Broody's art on this so I can sign it.
That's awesome. So good. That's a really good altar. I'm really glad Anthony asked that question, and I'm glad you had that answer. Beautiful.
I really like
good
the
memories.
Richard Kane Ferguson Price of Progress.
Price of Progress is a big favorite of mine because you can slap it on a stick.
It's great. I've been having fun with this card in the Neoclassical cube too, though I have more fixing in that cube than you have in this cube, and there's definitely had decks where it's like, well, that's gonna deal 12 to me, so I start at 8 effectively. My life total is very important to protect. But
do you have Isochron Scepter?
I do not have Isochron Scepter in that cube. It's all old border or old border inspired, and that imprint stuff. Imprint stuff is it's not getting looser. It's still my exact strict definition of what I think feels. What did I add that's looser?
I don't know, these new land cycling creatures.
They're just land cycling creatures.
Adeline's
not in there. It was never in there.
What? Ariel. Sorry.
Oh yeah, I mean I was just doing that for a very specific purpose. Uh-huh. Adeline.
It's different.
Ridiculous.
Night.
Can I zoom in on that Faithless Looting? If I can find it. Sorcery, one mana. That would be up here. Boop, 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 boop. Oh no. Where is
to the
it?
Right.
to the right. Wait, oh god.
Right.
There it is. Okay, I found it. I got a guy doing a jig, doing a little dance. Yeah, very sick. Well, cool. That's awesome. I think do you want to play our match, Anthony?
I'm not going to play well.
I mean, I'm not going to play well either. We can both not play well, and then we can both be done with it. If you want to hang out, Aqua, you're welcome to hang out and just chat with chat while we play some Magic. You can be like the guest commentator, or you're welcome to just say, I have things to do with my evening. I'm going to go.
I will hang on and chat. I will disconnect from the call. Thank you guys so much for this. It was very helpful.
Of course, yeah. Thanks for sharing your great cube with us. This was a lot of fun. All right, everyone say thank you, Aqua.
They said it.
They said it. All right. See ya. Talk to you later.